This episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Out of the Park Baseball 19, available now worldwide. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Out of the Park Baseball 19 is available now, today, directly from Out of the Park Developments. You can get it on Steam, you can get it on Origin, and if you are an Origin Access subscriber, you can play it now today as part of that plan. Oh my goodness, Out of the Park Baseball 19, we are so excited, so proud, so happy that you can now play Out of the Park Baseball 19. This is the best version of this game that has ever been put together. So much of the feedback that we've gotten from fans has been fantastic. Out of the Park Baseball 19 is the biggest. It is the best. It has the most stuff to do, and it looks amazing, and it plays great. Yes, this is all hype, but it's true. Just go look at what people are saying about it. Don't take my word for it. Go look on our Facebook page. Go look on our forums. Go look at our Twitter. It's amazing. Go look at our YouTube page, our Twitch live streams. People are really having a blast playing Out of the Park Baseball 19. You can get it today. Again, you can get it right from our website, Out of the Park Developments. You can get it right from Steam, and you can get it from Origin, or if you are a subscriber, it's only $5 a month to Origin Access. You can play Out of the Park Baseball 19 to your heart's content. Go check it out. We are so happy. Out of the Park Baseball 19, available now, today, $39.99 across all of your favorite platforms. Go check it out. Thank you, and enjoy the show. Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm Rich Grisham. This is a very special episode this week. Not a very special episode like, you know, you think of a very special episode. But it's a special episode because the godfather of sports video game podcasts, Mr. Adrian Todd Zuniga, is here. Yes, you heard that right. The man himself, Adrian Todd Zuniga. Welcome back to the show.
I can't believe it. What an honor. I mean, this is the second and or third time. I've been here, so it's pretty awesome. Thanks for having me.
Well, one of the many things that we're going to talk about tonight is your book. But that's where I want to start, because a lot of people who have listened to the show know you from many different areas. They might know you from the Sports Game Guys, Sports Anomaly. They might know you from Four String. They might know you from Literary Deathmatch. You know, they might know you from working with the Madden team and co-writing Long Shot with Mike Young. Although, let's face it, you did all the heavy lifting. So let's just say you wrote Long Shot.
He didn't do anything. He just sat around and was like, oh, man, you've done it again. It's pretty much just him being blown away, literally blown off of his chair repeatedly by how excellent my writing was.
But
good news there.
You may not know him as a published author. Mr. Zuniga, you have your first novel now available, right? I mean, talk to me about this.
Yeah, so it officially launches on April 17th. But okay. There was somebody shot me a Facebook note. You know how you have Facebook friends and every once you're like, I actually don't know who this is. This is outside the 50 people that my brain can comprehend.
Right.
But he saw the book in DC, and it was actually on a shelf, and it was surrounded by other books. And it was so cool because it was like cover out. It was the cover out section. And I was right near Kazuo Ishiguro and Jim Shepard, who wrote a short story called Trample the Dead, Hurdle the Weak, which is about high school football players doing steroids, which honestly, for this podcast, like if you love sports video games, if you care about football, that story is a powerhouse. Can I say powerhouse on this?
You can say powerhouse for sure.
Okay. I'll try not to profane. I know that's, you know, as Shakespeare would say. But yeah, so it comes out, and it's my first published novel, which is amazing. It's kind of cool because, like, this year, you know, we had Long Shot come out, or I guess that was last year, but within a year, like, these things are happening, and it feels, I don't know, it feels great because I worked on this book. I wrote it in 9 months, 13 years ago, and I edited it for 12 years, and I finally got it to the place that it had to be, and I'm pretty stoked.
So, first of all, let's just talk about what collision theory is about, right?
Because,
there's the, you know, you got to put together your own back of the box, right? Although it's the back of the book. So you got to summarize and pitch it, and you've been summarizing and pitching it for 12 to 12 to 100 years now, basically, right? So
yeah.
what's the story? What is collision theory all about?
So it's great that you set me up by saying that I've been pitching it for 12 years, because I realize I'm terrible. My elevator pitch is only coming together now as I'm starting to promote the book. So we'll see how I do. But I'll just tell you what happens in the first chapter to give you a sense. Very short, two-page chapter. But basically, a guy goes up to a rooftop in Brooklyn. And when he gets up there, he sees this woman is about to jump off the ledge. So to get her to not do that, he invites her to dinner. And then he invites her on a trip around the world. And, at a certain point, he's like, this isn't working, so just don't. And then the girl jumps and kills herself. So that's the first chapter. And then from there, it sort of veers into this guy's story. He's sort of having a hard time dealing with this suicide. And it jumps a year and a half later when his best friend comes to visit. And it's sort of this this journey he goes on. His mother's ill and she's calling, asking him to come home. And it sort of explores why he doesn't come home. And then I'm not doing a good job, but it's so excellent that I don't even have to. You just start reading it and you're like, oh, who could ever explain this fantastic, soon to be award-winning novel? I mean, who would even know how to do that? But anyway, that's the terrible description. But it's really about a lot of things. I don't know. I will say this. Here's an interesting thing, since it's a video game podcast. In the sort of the second chapter or the third chapter launches him into going to L.A. to pitch a movie about Elvis's Graceland being kidnapped by aliens. And in the original drafts of the book, it was actually a video game that he was pitching. And that video game concept, when I was 19, I was driving with Mike Young of Madden NFL fame. He and I were just like coming up with stupid ideas, and we came up with this idea. So this idea from a drive between Chicago and St. Louis when I was 19 is now turned into this core concept of this guy pitching. And and they're one of the companies that they pitch to is called EO Films, and Every Other Films. And another company is called Anarchy, which might relate to Rockstar in some way. So I don't know. It's kind of a fun, there's a lot of, I always put a lot of little things like that in my stuff. It's like Longshot. I've been talking for a long time because I'm uncomfortable with how poorly I pitch my novel. So I'm just rambling, but there's like this stuff in Longshot that I love is, there's three or four characters that are named after authors, and nobody would know that until now, but I'm going to spill the beans. So Ross Fountain is based off Ben Fountain, who wrote, Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, which became a movie by Ang Lee. And then Carrot, the girl who plays football late in the movie / mode, is named after an Israeli author named Edgar Carrot. So that's two. And then what's the third? There's so much weird stuff littered in there. I always try to do that. But anyway, I'll try to remember the third while we talk.
So you're a world traveler. I travel a lot. I travel for the various, revenue streams that I pursue. But I travel a lot in the United States, do a lot of trips up to New England and down to Florida, out to California, over to Seattle. But I have a home. I have a place that I come home to. You, sir, literally just moving from one place to the other, and not in the United States, in like Poland and Austria and England and all sorts of strange worded towns that are in countries I can't immediately identify without Googling them. And now you just like, as we're talking about setting up the show, you're like, yep. And I'm just sort of, I'm getting in from London on like, at this time. And
I was actually in Stockholm.
Dinner. Stockholm. There you go.
Yeah. Right. I have a Stockholm and then a dinner in San Francisco and now a podcast.
And so the question I have for you is, why Brooklyn to start Collision Theory from all the different places? Is that because it was where you were when you first had this idea and then all of this traveling has come afterwards, or is it more than that?
There's a line in the book where it says in the distance, the Brooklyn Bridge held together by floss. And I think I wrote that and I just was like, oh, that's really nice. Before I even thought about where I was going to set this. And that's the rooftop scene where the girl is going to maybe jump or not jump. And then she jumps. And I think that's the only reason. I don't think I was thinking about it and I was just typing. And then the core of the book happens in San Francisco, St. Louis, and Los Angeles. So the first chapter in Brooklyn, those other places. So, and I'm from St. Louis, and that's where, it's a bit of a spoiler, but he goes to St. Louis because his mother's ill and he goes back there. Why he goes back there is quite surprising. But yeah, so he sort of exists in those cities. And San Francisco was actually where I was living while I was writing the book. So there's a lot of little nods to different parts of the city. Especially there's this street corner. I'd have to fact check this, but I think it's New Montgomery Street and 2nd Avenue. And this like two squares of the sidewalk are super glittery. And I walked by that spot all the time when I was working at 1UP, and I was just like, man, that's such a weird spot in the sidewalk. And then I end up having like something about a paparazzi sparkle or something. So that came from that street corner, and then LA because of the movie Pitch, and then St. Louis because that's, yeah, the family factor. But yeah, so the book moves around four different places.
Here's something that nobody but you and I would know. Many years ago, I don't know exactly how many, but more than a few, you actually significantly helped me with a process that turned out not to be something that happened, but exploring and having actual conversations and summaries and multiple actual like meetings and phone calls with people about a potential book project. And you were the one who did everything to help me make that happen. But that was, I don't know, 5-10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
What's it like now trying to get a book published, and what route did you take to make this book actually be something that anybody can go buy and read?
Yeah, my route that I took, I don't know, I guess being from St. Louis, I say route and you say route. That's interesting. Anyway,
I'm an Alabama born guy from New Jersey.
There we
so,
go.
So it's a complete, you know, mashup of Deep South and East Coast bias. So
yeah, who knows what could happen. That's where you go from. I think for me, I wrote a book that was very electrifying text wise, but not very good. And so that created the long path to the 13 years. Over the years at different times I had an agent that is doing quite well, early on in the book's process, but I'd sent him the book when it was an early draft. And then by the time he got back to me, I'd completely rewritten it. And he was like, oh, well, yeah, that's fine. And he didn't sell it. And that was like in year two or three of the process. But I just kept going back to it and back to it. And then because of Literary Deathmatch and my connections to all the agents in the world through these writers that I know, I ended up emailing a lot of them. I was like, hey, I have two books because I had another book. And I was like, can I send you part of each, or what, you know, what would you like to do? If you
help me out here. Come on.
Yeah. And then they, pretty much everybody was like, sure, I'll read something. And a lot of people would read the first 50 pages. Some people asked for the full manuscript. And I just got a series of love letters that were really, really long. They were just like, it's extraordinary and the writing's amazing and it really crackles and la la, but I'm not the guy to represent it, or I'm not the girl to represent it. And then finally, my friend had sent it to his agent, and I went to Literary Deathmatch to do the show in Brooklyn once, and his agent was there, and he's like, hey, did you get my email? I'm like, no. And he was like, yeah, your book, it's incredible, like blah, blah, blah. And he basically said all the things that you would ever dream that somebody would say. And he said this amazing thing. He's like, your book is virtuosic. And at that point, like, everybody had said no, and this agent had said that, and I wasn't necessarily losing hope, but I'd kind of been like, okay, I guess it's not going to happen with these. And when he said that, I was like, yeah, it's virtuosic, like, exactly. So that gave me a lot of confidence and let me be a little egomaniac for about 3 seconds. And then we ended up rewriting the book, I think, 1.5 times, and then just with his notes and his ideas. And then he took it from there, and then he went out and tried to sell it. And so he sends it. Typically what happens is you send it to the big publishers and hope they get excited. And again, it was like really lovely notes, but no's. And then we got an independent publisher in LA that was interested. And then they came to Literary Deathmatch. And this is like a recurring theme. And he's like, "Hey, did you get your email from your agent?" I'm like, "Nope." And then they're like, "Yeah, we want to publish it." So I was like, "Holy shit." And then because it's an indie, you know, the process is much different. With major publishers, sometimes the book won't be published for 2 years, but with indies, they're kind of like, "All right, we want to do it within, you know, 9 months, la la la." So I don't know if that answered your question. I feel like maybe it did.
Yeah. But. And well, and the follow up is, so these days, 2018, April, right? The way that people can consume books are just so myriad. You can obviously go buy a book at a bookstore. You can buy a physical book from Amazon and have it sent to you. You can consume them immediately on Kindles and tablets and phones and things like that. So, you know, I have, you know, there are other people, you probably know, like Chris Baker, right? He self-published a couple things. And did you ever think of like self-publishing, or what is it that the publisher gets you that you don't? I would presume it's things like marketing dollars and getting your name out there in ways that you don't have the ability to do. But like, did that sort of ever cross your mind?
Yeah, I ran this literary magazine called Opium, and it was a literary humor magazine. And so we published like literary stuff, but a lot of it was funny, or we'd take quirky stuff. And at one point I did this thing called, I emailed everybody who had ever submitted, and I said, "What's the best writing advice that you got from someone else?" And so they would, you know, send me these blurbs and this writing advice. And then I would go find the people that they blurbed and say, "Okay, I got this blurb, you know, like this advice from you, but could you give me advice that you got?" So it was trying to create like a network or a string of things. And one of the things that someone said was, "Don't self-publish, go for the golden ring." And that sort of stuck with me, because I was like, yeah, I don't want to do all that work. And I also, I guess in some way, I wanted somebody to be like, this is so good that I'm going to put my money behind it, or I'm going to put my life, I'm going to put my concern behind it. And so that was sort of something I held out for. And also, I've always believed in stockpiling work and just like writing my butt off. And like, you know, if I keep writing and keep creating stuff, each thing I write will be better than the last. And eventually, you know, people won't be able to deny it. So with this book, that was sort of what happened too, just me rewriting it and not giving up on it. Cause I was like, no, this is like there's something really amazing here. So I just kept trying to tease out that amazing until finally somebody cared. I forgot what the original question was.
you just answered it. About self-publishing.
Right.
How different, and I'm not asking for specifics, how different is the sort of original complete version, if that makes sense, and the version that we're going to be able to go buy in a couple of weeks?
I mean, I would say the draft, between drafts 11 and 13, which those were the final ones, I'd say 30% to 40% different. But I would say the original draft to that 11th draft, I would say is like 60 to 63% different. So it's like, I don't know, the story was always basically the same, but then I would start inserting things and pulling things out. And it was, I don't know, it's a really interesting thing to have done it over so many years means I've kind of forgotten certain elements of how it came together. But the core, like this idea of this man seeing this woman and then she ends up jumping, was always there. And the end changed several different times. And I finally, like the end I came up with in the end was over the last two drafts, because I was like, oh yeah, that's what this is really about. And I think when you're editing a book and now with screenplays that I'm doing, like you're trying to get to the idea of like, what's it actually about? And so for the later drafts, you're sort of like glazing over every scene with that concept. And that's, I don't know, it's a pretty fascinating process because you start cutting and changing stuff because you're like, oh, that actually has no place in this book. Really pretty sentence, but we can just hack it to bits now. So yeah, it's pretty well processed.
How long do you hold on to, or what's the longest that you can sort of remember where you've had a phrase or a turn of a few words, or, you know, for musicians, it's usually a song lyric or a chord progression. You know, what's the longest that you sort of had something and then it wound up in something like either this book or in Long Shot or in some of the other stuff that you have done? Because you have produced a voluminous amount of things over the course of your time.
That's pretty absurd. I would say, I guess what I thought you were going to ask was like, did anything last until like the last draft that you finally cut that you were in love with from the first draft? And there were like two or three things
that
I was like,
question than I asked.
Go ahead
and just roll with that one there.
Yeah. But no, I mean, it was interesting. I was, because of that thing I was saying where you finally figure out what it's about and you look at it through that lens, then I was like, oh, this is, I'm going to cut this. Holy shit. Like, I can't believe it lasted this long. Like, there were probably three or four things that got cut in the last draft, like the last draft, that I was like, oh yeah, that's funny. I really, really wanted that to stay. But your question was, were there things that I've like carried with me, or like phrases that I love that I
just something feel. You knew that one way somehow you were going to get it into something the right way, and then it happened.
I don't think so, because I'm just so dumb. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. My ignorance allows me not to. Now, there must be something, but I know there are phrases that I think of that I'm just like, I'm going to abandon these phrases or this idea. Like, don't, it's basically about not forcing it in. That's my advice to myself, is just do not force it. Like, you can feel it, like the crackle or tingle of its necessity, or versus like, yeah, you think this is good, but it's not good.
So how do I buy Collision Theory? Like, I can pre-order it now. How do I do that? How do I best support you? Cause that's what I want to do, is I want to support Todd Zuniga, Adrian Todd Zuniga. I want all of the listeners to support Adrian Todd Zuniga, Collision Theory, because we would not be having this conversation on the 260-something episode of the Press Row podcast, which is the successor to the Fourth String podcast, which was a successor to the Sports Game Guys Sports Anomaly. So support you. Support Adrian Todd. How do we do that? What's the best way?
The best way, well, so I'll tell you something that I've learned by both being with an independent publisher and like finding out that the people who care most about books are independent bookstores, which I think we all kind of know, but we don't really understand beyond that. It's just like, yeah, buy from an indie. It's great. Barnes & Noble and Amazon or whatever. But the reality is this, like, if you go to indiebound.org and buy my book, that means like a independent bookstore near you will get the sale, and then they're the ones to send it to you. And why that is relevant, I found, is because if you buy from Amazon, you are like, you're putting like a number next to my numbers, which are a series of zeros and ones. Like, I am just a number to them, and then a book is just a number. It's not, it doesn't mean anything, and it's in the large system of meaninglessness. But if you buy from an independent book publisher, like, there's somebody there that's like, oh, that's cool. Like, this guy exists and his people care. And if enough of that happens, then they start to go, huh, this must be really good. We'll put it at the front of the store. We'll put it next to the counter. We'll read it ourselves and talk about it. And that's like, that's a cool thing that I just never understood. But the personal factor of an independent bookstore is enormous. And so if you buy it from indiebound.org, it's just better for society. I don't think, like, a couple of people have emailed me. They're like, how do you get the most money out of me buying your book? And I'm like, I don't even know how any of it works. So I'm just trying to get, just have it be sold the right way. But if you buy it from Amazon, totally get it. Prime people who need it the next day or in 2 days. But, otherwise you can go through the IndieBound system, and it's a good one.
And what about if we want to buy an electronic version of it? Will that be available at some point, or are you sticking with physical copies for now?
Yeah, I think especially for indies, I think they want to hold off on that. And that's another thing that's interesting. If you pre-order the book, because it's not out until April 17th, that means that my publisher will go, okay, this is working. We made a good choice, you know. And then also independent bookstores will go, oh, this is cool. And every pre-order goes towards the first week book sales, so we could get me on the bestseller list. Let's do it, guys. Am I right?
So tell me exactly the website to go to, because I'm going to do this exactly.
IndieBound.
IndieBound?
.org. Yep.
IndieBound.org. The book's name is Collision Theory. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I'm messing you up. So if I sign your book, which I eventually will sign your book for sure, but beautiful. I can figure out a way to get books signed because I'll be touring all over the country and whatnot. But one of the core concepts of the book is that if you meet someone at like a dinner party in a romantic way, if you meet them romantically, but you're at a dinner party, that's just sort of a meet. But a collision theory, the theory of the collision is that you should meet someone in sort of an extraordinary way, which relates to the guy on the rooftop. And that may or may not be a flawed theory in the book. But so when I'm signing books, I'm going to be writing a crazy literary fact and then putting the hashtag collision theory so people can actually find one another online using this fact, and then you will be paired up. So that's my idea for signing it. And to give you an idea, one of the facts, I just found this one out, so this will be one of the ones I write in there. But Lord Byron used to call William Wordsworth William Turdsworth. Oh, God. It's so good. The best part about that is, like, it's so juvenile, and yet that was, like, 200-plus years ago.
Right.
I mean, I don't even know when that was, but an amazing thing to call someone.
I want to change gears here for a minute.
Let's do it.
I loved 1UP. It was the first thing that I ever really that ever really sort of got me into video games. I always loved video games since I was a little kid. But when 1UP became 1UP, it was just such a different thing. All of the different people talking about all of the different games and making the videos and doing the podcasts. Talk to me about where you were then, right? Because you were in the mix. You were always doing, obviously, all the sports game reviews for, I guess, 1UP and EGM too, right? As well as a bunch of other stuff. But you also you made or were a producer for a very good basketball video game, one of the NBA Street games, like in intermix and all this. Just like today, you're just always. I love this. One of the things I love about you, I chat about you with my wife every once in a while. She's like, "Where in the world is he right now? And how many different things is he doing?" I'm just like, "Well, he's in Stockholm and he's got like three different things cooking." So
yeah.
So, but 1UP itself, just from the outside looking in, what was cool is I got to actually become a very small part of it, contributed a few freelance things, and then ultimately was able to connect with you in a much bigger way through the Games Radar writing and then Four String when you guys asked me to start coming on.
But yeah,
talk to me about that, because, again, that inspired me in an entire – like, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now had that not existed. What was it like then? Where were you in that? What are some of your thoughts and memories from that day? Because that was a pretty amazing time from the outside. I'm sure it was from the inside too.
Yeah, I started with Expert Gamer. Then I went to Official PlayStation Magazine. That's how I got linked into doing some EGM stuff. And then from there, it turned into 1UP. And by the way, Sean Smith of Seanimals fame and of old EGM fame, he's going to be doing an interview with me in Chicago on May 25th at a bookstore. So it's cool kind of bringing in somebody that far back who does weird creative stuff. But I'll say this. This is the thing that sticks out to me most about that thing is like the people that were around in that era are just – I don't want to say they're like just crazy likable, because I'm sure there are some more me's in the bunch that are a little bit grating, but like like John Davison and Dan Hsu and Sam Kennedy, and that, like, there were some pillar people. Mark McDonald, there, Sean Crispin Boyer, Glover, Crispin Boyer, I think, over Glover. Crispin Glover seems like another guy.
I think he's a guitarist in Living Color, but it could be.
That's it, yeah. But like, all these people were just funny and weird, but like, I don't know. It was a really cool time because I know with Official PlayStation Magazine, we were with John Davison at the helm, and we were able to do some like crazy stuff. Like, I felt like we were really defining how video game journalism could be made. And then with 1UP, it was, I don't know, it was just such a cool mix of people. And the idea of being able to do all these different things, the podcast, the videos, all this stuff, it was just awesome. Like, I feel really proud to have been any part of that, because I saw a picture that Hsu had taken at
GDC, right?
GDC, yeah. And he was just like, oh, look at us all in the picture. And I was just like, wow, that's really cool. Those people are all smart and funny and weird. And just, I don't know, it was a really special group. And I think, I mean, I guess John Davison had a big part to do with that, just in making sure all the good people came in. But it's also just luck. I think everybody around in different places had their own communities and their own style, and that benefited them for whatever. But I know that the 1UP people, I mean, here's a story to give you an example. I love this story and I love telling it. But Crispin and Sean Smith were playing Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2. And, you know, the first one had been a hit and they were playing this one. And there's a mode where you could do skate, S-K-A-T-E. So you had to go through and like hit them all in one line, get all the letters in one line. And in the second one, I think it was the second one, you could then change the letters to be whatever word you wanted, and you could make it longer and you could, you know, custom do stuff. And there's this one point where I would go over and they're like, you want to play Turdy? We're playing Turdy. And I was like, what are you guys talking about? And so they basically made Turdy the word to collect. So then I think it was when the third one came out, they had called the publicist and they're like, hey, you know, the game's cool and all, but there's no Turdy mode. And the publicist got off the phone very quickly and then called Neversoft and was like, oh man, these guys are bummed out. There's no Turdy mode. What's going on? Where's the Turdy mode? So that's like a perfect example of kind of the, just the personality. That's what it is. The personality of the people that were at 1UP was extraordinary. And I mean, they've all gone off, and I don't even know what the landscape of video game magazines is now, really. Like, I guess I mean, are there any print video game magazines? Probably not. There's no print magazines. What am I talking? Hey, rickety old man, come out. Where are the video game magazines?
No, there's one. I mean, there's Game Informer.
Oh, right. That's still
hooked up to GameStop.
Ah, right. Yeah.
Those are a couple of business models that are sort of looking backwards instead of looking forwards. But they're still there, and they have influence, no doubt about it.
Which is weird,
but no, there's not that I know of. Anyway, it's funny. I was in a Barnes and Noble not that long ago, a month or two ago, and I sort of wandered over to the ever shrinking magazine section. Right, remember the magazine section used to be huge,
huge, yeah,
and now it's tiny, and probably will disappear within a couple of years. And there were a few video game magazines, but they weren't like, you know, the March issue of 2018. They were just sort of several one-offs, right? Like you know, Nintendo Switch focused game, you know, the best games on the Switch, and
yeah,
you know, a few other things. So it's, I don't know of any other than Game Informer at all that's a magazine. And even, you know, the sites there are few of the quote-unquote video game sites are dedicated to video games. There's a lot of pop culture and movies and TV, which is fine. I mean, you know,
right.
they got to find their audience and make sure people come back. But I don't know. It feels like to me, and maybe it's just because I'm not paying that much attention, right? But it feels like to me there isn't any place that is sort of a traditional site that has that, but there are obviously the, you know, the Kind of Funnies with Greg Miller and the Easy Allies, like sort of what 1UP was, feels to me like it's been replaced by other personality driven driven, you know, groups, but they're not doing reviews and news. Yeah, yeah. They're doing whatever they do, because I don't even know.
This speaks to one thing, which is there's also the thing is Jeff Keighley does like an award show too, right?
Yes, he does.
Yeah. And like, the validity of that award show is 0% with me, because Long Shot wasn't nominated for anything. And I'm like, come on.
Fair point.
I don't know. So, I mean, I just think that's weird. I'm just going to go out. I'm going to go out on a limb and say, if we got nominated for a Writers Guild of America award, I think we might have, you know, earned. But that's where sports video games exist, is people. I doubt people played it, because they would have been like, you know, biased in advance. And if they did play it and didn't like it, then they're wrong. So,
well, I mean, look, I loved it. And I, you know what? It's very possible that I loved it because of you, and, you know, because you're a friend of mine. I consider you a friend. We've actually met in person a few times too, right?
Many times. Not just, it feels like internet, at least three.
Yeah. At least three.
Did you cry when you played it?
I didn't cry. No, I'm sorry.
Did anybody around you cry?
Well, my wife cried when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, but that doesn't really count for what we're talking about. That's her only football-related crying I've ever seen in my life. So
I got up at 5 a.m. to watch that game in Shanghai. So
really?
Shanghai.
We were in China for the Super Bowl. That makes complete sense.
Yep, it was great. I loved it. but anyway, yeah, I just wondered if people cried, because I feel like, I don't know. I think... It's interesting with the landscape, because we got the – I'm just changing topics here left
and
right.
Go for it, man.
Like, Polygon named Madden Game of the Year, and they basically said it was because of Longshot and the chances it took. And then this award show came, and there was just no – like, I think Jack Ford should have been nominated as, like, one of the best actors. And I think we should have gotten some kind of nod, because I thought going in marketing-wise, like – sports game trying this, that's crazy, let's see if it's any good. But I think people are just like, yeah, there's something in Madden. I don't know. Well, I wonder if it's true.
There was a couple of sites that I look at daily. Now granted, this is more because of my job with Out of the Park. Well, that's not true. I looked at them before Out of the Park. I'm just even more interested now with Out of the Park. But I look at, obviously, Operation Sports
every
day and follow the conversations there. And there were lots and lots and lots and lots of conversations about Longshot. And
my favorite is the, like, this isn't what I wanted, so I hate it. This is my favorite response to Longshot. Like, people are like, yeah, cool. Where's the fix the game, turds? Or where's superstar mode that I exactly what I want? And I was like, yeah, that's funny. But anyway,
well, it's a broad audience for Madden, and
it is.
There's a lot of different people that play a lot of different parts of that game.
Yeah. What was the conversation that you sort of noticed most?
It was conversations around kind of what you're talking about, where people are like, I'd rather they do X, Y, and Z than Longshot. And what I believe, and I don't know if I'm right or wrong, I don't know that there was a choice of whether that you guys would do Longshot or X, Y, and Z. It's just like, okay, we're going to do Longshot. We're going to put these people that are on Longshot and make them do that, but they're not taking resources away from gameplay or, you know, online tuning or things like that. That's my sense, just because Longshot to me feels like a separate thing that would have to be done. Obviously, you'd be working with the team to some degree, but not something that would take anything away. But I was always, and again, I've said this, I'm not saying it just because you're on the show, but it's nice that I do get to tell you because you're on the show. I'm a huge fan of this. I've been a fan of story modes in sports games forever. We've talked about it for 20 years, it feels like, right? You know, with Fight Night Champion and with the Spike Lee story. Like, this is, I'm all for this. Why not? What's the harm? If anything, it's a new way for people to at least have an experience with a game like this that to many people is very complicated, very difficult, very tough to get into. This is a new way in. And I was excited about it. And I thought it was a lot of fun. There were things that I had issues with, which we can go in detail if you want. But overall, I didn't think it was EA and Tiburon choosing to do Longshot over investing in other parts of the game. Is that an accurate sentiment from your standpoint?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's just like a mode. Like, it wasn't like, oh, we're going to rip gameplay. Let's focus on Longshot. No, it wasn't like that at all. And it's interesting, because I feel like My ultimate take on Longshot is that it should have gotten more support from anybody who cares about sports video games, especially Madden players, because it's like they like the idea of taking a chance. Longshot is probably one of the craziest things EA Sports has ever done. And it's like it's so innovative and so different and so huge in a way. And I feel like that it's a really extraordinary thing. Like, it's funny. It's inarguably funny at parts. I don't like, it might not be to your taste the whole time, but at least you like laugh once or twice. And like, that's, I don't know, that's pretty insane to have an honestly like sports movie that appears in a game that has the football stuff, that has emotion, that has jokes. I don't know. I feel like that's the kind of stuff I thought it would generally be more supported by the community, just because it's like, oh wow, they're trying to do something here. Let's support the fact, you know. But that's not how the world works. They just go, oh, it's not exactly what I wanted. So I don't know. I loved talking to people on Twitter about it, because people are like, I hated it. I would write them and I'd be like, why did you hate it? And they'd be like, well, I wanted superstar mode. And I was like, well, but it's not superstar mode, so you hate it because it's not exactly what you wanted. But, you know, and by talking to people about it, a lot of people are like, well, I didn't hate it. I actually thought it was fun. I just, you know, but then I don't know if that's just because when people get confronted about this stuff, they'll tend to be nicer. But I don't know. It was interesting. One guy was criticizing it, and we went around and around in circles, because I was really going like really up for being patient with this guy. But he's basically like, it's not the story I would have told. So I didn't really like it. I didn't like the story. It was cliche. And I was like, what's cliche about a guy going on a reality TV show that doesn't exist, and then like going to Iraq or wherever in the Middle East, and then a girl catches a touchdown pass? I'm like, what is cliche? Like, it's not cliche. A guy's on a thing.
When you put it that way.
Yeah. It's like, there's some crazy stuff in there that's not cliche. So I'm like, so in the end, he basically was like, I was like, what story would you tell? And then he had nothing to say to that. Cause I don't know. That's always interesting to me. I think, I don't know. I'm a huge defender of it, cause I believe in it and I think it's really good. But I also love hearing criticism about it, cause I don't, you know, I'm like, cool. Yeah. And actually there's one piece, there was legitimate criticism about it. And I was like, wow, nobody's ever written criticism about something I've done, like in this real deep way of like talking about it from an emotional standpoint and all this stuff. So that was cool. What was your criticism? Is there one you have that you remember or three?
Well,
curious if I'll agree with you.
My biggest issue is the chord progression in the Longshot song. It should not go to the E minor. It should go to the C. It's a long shot. It's a long shot. Ooh, the ooh is not supposed to be on an E minor. It should go to the C. That's number
right.
one. Now,
that's interesting.
I also know, because you told me on an episode of the Press Room podcast, probably right around the time that it came out or afterwards, that the famous tough NHL player Theo Fleury,
yep,
either wrote or co-wrote, I think wrote on his own, that song, which means that I would not go up to Mr. Fleury and suggest that he wrote the chord progression correctly, but I'm very comfortable telling you that.
Yeah, that's I feel like he wouldn't respond well. No, I'm kidding.
I wouldn't if I were him. I know that.
Yeah. He co-wrote it with his friend. I think he wrote all the lyrics, and then his friend does the music, and then they do the music together. There's some process they go through. Here's a crazy fast fact. I've written a script about Theo Fleury's life that is a pretty – it's wild. He is – I don't know how much you know about him, but he
– I want in. However, I can get involved with this project, I want in. He – led a colorful life on and off the ice would be, you know, that would be an understatement, right?
It's insane. I actually have an elevator pitch for this, because it's I guess you have to. But basically, for people who don't know him, Theo Fleury was a hockey player in the 90s. He was 5'6" tall, fearless, total wrecking ball, just man out of control, and fast, goal scorer, just an electrifying player. But off the ice, he was an alcoholic, drug addict, sex addict, gambling addict. And basically what came out near the end of his career was that he had been molested by his hockey coach when he was 15. He had been raped 150 times. So sort of that behavior was bred from him, you know, denying and resisting this Me Too situation for him. And it's just the movie, the script is, it's so harrowing and crazy. Like, his life was insane. I mean, I read this book that he had written, and like, he's talking about going on 3-day benders, and early in the book he explains them, and you're like, geez, I couldn't get through like 6 hours of partying with this guy.
Right.
And then later in the book, it came to a point where he would just literally write a sentence like, and then I went on a 3-day bender. You know, it was like, it was just so regular to him that, yeah, it's mad. And he would stay up until 6 a.m. drinking, doing whatever he wanted. And then he would show up to like, to meet with his trainer at 6 a.m. when the guy's like, man, you stink. And he's like, I haven't slept yet. Yeah. And then he would just run. He would run like up hills. Like I couldn't even run up that hill totally sober. And he's just like running up and down. He was an incredible athlete. And his story is, yeah. So that's pretty interesting side note.
Unbelievable. Yeah. So, yeah, it's got to go to the C, not the E minor. It could get to the E minor eventually, but not there. So,
As a person who's so musically dumb and pretty much only listens to the Hamilton cast album, I'm like, although there's a song on the Black Panther soundtrack that's really influencing the novel I'm working on. But I'm going to look that up while we talk. Oh, King is Dead. Is the King is Dead or King is Dead? But anyway.
I see the King is Dead is my favorite album by the Decemberists. So that's
really
how I associate that. Yeah.
It's all coming together.
It really
right
is.
On the podcast.
It really is. Hey, what's your relationship to sports video games today, April 2018?
Great question. I'm in a Madden league. Chilimba Nyong'o is my quarterback, the brother of Lupita Nyong'o. I don't know if he really exists, but that's my quarterback. He plays for the London Bulldogs. I'm 7-4. I feel good about my chances. Finished 6-10 last year. So I'm in a Madden league with 32, where it used to be 31 other guys. And then we scaled back because we tried to only have people who play the game the right way. We're like the Brian McCann of video game football. You know, there's a certain way to play, but, we've sort of that league, I would like to get it back up again. And I was like, how do we get people that are like, that play fair, who aren't going to just spam whatever.
It's tough. It's tough.
It is tough.
Especially now with Ultimate Team. Ultimate Team has sucked a lot of people towards it. Not that you know, you can't find people, but that's another, it's almost a competitor to the online franchise.
Well, for this league, we have a ton of offline stuff and just storylines. And we do a lot of emailing. That's like my division rival. He's the Chiefs, and he's got Little Andy, which is a coach. But he basically has made his team like North Korea, where players aren't allowed to speak or whatever. It's pretty hilarious. So we have a lot of storylines. But so I play that. And then I'm also and if you want to join the league, and if you are a normal human being who's like going to be cool, at AT Zuniga on Twitter, you can just tell me and we'll try to fit you in. And then I just started the FIFA league with you. And
that is,
I guess,
so good.
Six of them. So it's fun.
So good.
Oh, my God. I haven't really played. I think soccer is the best video game sport. And I am going to the Australia-France World Cup game, my first World Cup. Can't believe it. Very excited.
You'll be in Russia. So is there
great time.
Quick aside, real quick. We're going to get back to FIFA for a minute because I got to talk to you about this. Just the logistics of you playing it fascinate me. But you've been to Shanghai, you've been to China, you've been to Japan, you've been to Russia, you've been all over Europe. Is there a part of the world you haven't been to that you want to go to, or have you pretty much been everywhere? That
never been to Africa, which I'm like embarrassed by. I'm trying to get to South Africa to do a literary death match, but I would really like to go to Ghana. And that's my Akragana is one of my targets. And then I'd like to go to Marrakesh in Morocco. But yeah, I want to go all over always. And I've never been to Buenos Aires. So that and Iran. I want to go to Tehran, but I don't know when that's going to happen.
Is that a place you can see? Like,
I think
you're like an international person. You're almost like an expat. Like, are you able to somehow go there where other people wouldn't because of, you know, various statuses you may or may have? Or
no, nobody cares. Okay. I think it's just that I would try to go. So that almost, like, the will to go is almost.
There you go.
But I wouldn't go to Iran right now. I wouldn't go to Syria. I've been to Beirut and things like that. So, like, I've been to places where you're like, is that? But it's fine. You know, a lot of places are actually fine. but yeah, I've never been to New Zealand. My girlfriend's from Australia. Mm. So I go there regularly now and for Christmas. I don't want to go to India. I have nothing against anything to do with India, except that I'm just like, it seems like an eat, pray, love kind of place. And I've just never been into it. Okay. But I will go, and that's my feeling. Like, I'll eventually go, and I'm going to have an amazing time, and I'll love it in all the ways. But, yeah, mostly Africa.
Do you have a home, or do you – and I don't mean this in a rude way, but, like, do you have, like, a permanent place of residence? Because it doesn't seem like you ever are in the same place for more than a few weeks, but maybe that's just perception.
It's definitely perception, which I didn't know that I was cultivating, but I was. So I lived in I live in London now, but I'm living there like I leave enough to where nobody cares that I'm there. And then I was in LA before that for 5 years, and then in Paris before that for a year and a half, and then in before that New York, San Francisco, so we alternated. So there's the 5 years in LA was the big one. And then I moved to Orlando for 4.5 months to do Long Shot. In there, but London, fake living in London, real living in a fake way.
So the logistics then of because you when you know, we get the you know the ATZ signal goes up, you send out the email to the FIFA league. You're like, hey, I got an Xbox in front of me and I can play FIFA for the next six hours. Let's go. So
yeah.
That's pretty much
which I'm embarrassed by our league's disinterest in doing that. I feel like our league doesn't jump on it. So we need some more people.
Hey, I had jumped on it. I saw the signal and we played some games. So
I was at Mike Young's house one time when we played. That game is super fun, but like it is intense. Our games were pretty amazing. Yeah. I can't
both
hit the net.
One goal games.
I can't hit the net when it matters. So I think the shooting is weird, and I don't know if it's the game's fault, but I grew up on Winning 11 and Pro Evolution Soccer. I don't know. It feels weird. It feels heavy or whatever. I don't think they've ever quite mastered that. I don't know. The intensity of those games in the league have been awesome. Yes. And our games are particularly like, but didn't you score like an insane goal that went under the crossbar down?
The only free kick goal I have ever scored in FIFA was in our match. The only one I've ever done. And
the dick.
If you remember, I had no idea how to kick a penalty shot.
But yes, and you
committed three fouls against me in the offensive zone. I missed the first two, but I converted the third, and that turned out to be the decisive goal.
Yeah. You know what's funny about FIFA, I noticed too, is there are games where I won't do one slide tackle, but then sometimes if I do one, it's like the whole team is just like, I got to get mine in. It's crazy. I don't know. Psychologically, there's something to that. And I wonder if there's, I don't know. But yeah, I that game, I was just going hog wild. There's no reason for me to do that over and over. But yeah. So those are the only two sports games I'm playing nowadays. But I don't even know. There's just, I don't know. There's not as much. There's not as much pouring out. And I don't have the time. But
well, it's all about time. I mean, I play MLB right now. I play NBA 2K18.
I actually really like that, too.
It's so great.
I played with the Thunder, so that was really fun because Westbrook is basically you can just play, you know, you never have to pass or whatever.
Right.
So I really enjoy that game. Yeah.
Yeah, I played a season as the Wizards, and that was fun because you got Wall and Beal. And then after I did that, I'm like, I don't want to go to season two. I want to play with somebody else. So then what I did was I just started the season at that moment, you know, because NBA 2K lets you do that. And it was like very late February. And I'm like, you know what? I'll be the Sixers. And the difference between playing as the Wizards and the Sixers is it's so stark. Because the Wizards are all about, you got John Wall whizzing around at the top, spinning around, dishing off the Beal, shooting a long shot, or calling a pick and roll with Wall and having him drive or hitting Gortat, you know, in the post.
Yeah.
The Sixers have no point guard. So all of a sudden, I'm like, I don't even know what to do. I can't get the ball down low. Embiid, I don't know how to properly use him. I got Redick who can shoot threes, but he's no Beal. I'm a mess. But that's one of the great things about NBA 2K is that who you have on the court completely matters.
Yeah, you know, yeah, yeah. That's interesting because in FIFA, I feel like – I'm sorry. In Madden, basically, this year is a little bit different, but – for years, it didn't matter who your quarterback was. They were going to be fine. And this year, now they've implemented a system where the guy will miss the pass by 30 yards or, like, just throw to the other team is my experience. But, yeah, that is cool when you really feel that difference. And then you have to adjust. Like, you legitimately have to play differently.
Right. I have to figure out how to run a team without a point guard. Like, I've got Ben Simmons as my point guard. That doesn't even make sense.
Is Markelle Fultz not available?
Well, when I started it, he wasn't, but he just showed up in the last game. All of a sudden, I'm like six games in, and now he just showed up. I'm like, wait, what's happening here?
Now it's going to get real.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be a lot of fun.
That's good. I like it. I feel like you have other complaints about Longshot that you're not telling me about. I feel like you.
No, I mean, let me think. They were not complaints because I'm an unabashed fan of that.
I like challenging people on Longshot. Clearly, I'm like, come at me, bro.
Well, I love the multiple endings. Right? That's great. Yeah.
Ending did you get?
He didn't get drafted because I just wasn't good enough.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, it was sort of the sad walking. And I mean, it's been a long time since I played it. What is that? Five, 6 months. But I mean, it was basically him sad walking. I mean, it didn't end sad, but it wasn't. I think. Colt was his buddy, right? He got drafted ahead of
Devin.
Of Devin. And Devin either was not drafted or was drafted very late. But yeah, that was what I got.
To get them both drafted, I think 1% of people got that. Ooh. So that's like the magical ending. My girlfriend, so my experience with Longshot was we got the game. My girlfriend and I sat down at like 8 p.m. My friend was in from Paris, and she played the entire thing straight through that night. And so I've never actually played it, but watching her play it was so amazing because it just like she got so excited. She got so emotional. My girlfriend's like 100% invested in stuff when she does it. So it was like such a cool thing to watch her play it and for her to be able to play it. And just her panic about every decision being the wrong one. Like she always wanted to be nice, but then like the game actively will put you in a position where there's no perfect answer. So I don't know. I want to play it. I haven't found the time to actually sit down and do it. But once I do, I'm looking forward to it. But yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you can't say anything, and I wouldn't want you to say anything. But I mean, is there anything specific? Is there a future for Longshot, or is there?
It's a 10-part series, so it's going to be like a Netflix show. But no. I hope there's more coming. There's either I'm saying that and know something, or I'm saying it and I don't know something. It's really who knows. But I don't know. I mean, to me, if I were like a filmmaker, if I were a producer, I'd be like, yeah, we got to try this again. Let's see what else we can milk out of you guys. But we'll see if EA did or didn't do that. But I think, I don't know. It doesn't feel like Devin's story is finished. I mean, here's what I'll say about it is like we wrote the first one. There are two. I'm sure I talked about this with you when it came out. But there's basically two narratives in sports video games. There's the hot young rookie becomes a superstar who wins the championship, or like team wins championship. There's like no rookie situation. And to me, the idea of making long shot where the, what we wanted was it to feel like you won the Super Bowl when you just barely got onto the bottom rung of the NFL ladder. And so that was sort of our goal. And our goal initially was like, if that happens, then, you know, then we're going to zip into more stuff and like keep going. So we've always had a plan for how to do it if it succeeded. So I don't know. It's I love it, and I love the characters, and I think there's just a lot to explore. But yeah, it's ultimately I'm just some, you know, Turd Ferguson. I'm just here to write. I just remembered that Turd Ferguson was the thing that Norm Macdonald said on an episode of SNL as Burt Reynolds on Jeopardy, and he answered Turd Ferguson, and I don't know why, but that's the second time it's come up today, and I'm fucking thrilled about it, quite frankly.
His Burt Reynolds is one of the funniest things. I am a Norm Macdonald fan.
Okay.
At least from his Saturday Night Live and his very underrated and very great work in The Middle. I don't know if you've ever seen him on that. As the brother of the main dad character, spectacular.
Oh no! And do you want your mind blown? I will tell you a story right now that will blow your mind. Okay, I'm 21. I was a section of the entertainment editor of my college newspaper, the DePaul University. Go Blue Demons! You guys are really making a go in the whatever division you're in. And because I was the news, or I was the entertainment editor, basically we could do whatever we wanted. And so I decided to name Norm Macdonald Man of the Year of our college newspaper because I loved him so much. So then my girlfriend and I went to go see him do stand up. And in the middle of his show, she just pulled the story out of my hand and went up and set it on the stage. And mid stand up, which I would never allow to do now that I've done stand up, but she did that, and then he picked it up and he looked at it and he's like, huh, and he set it back down. And then after the show, I realized that because I was the editor of the thing, I forgot to put a byline on there. So my name wasn't even on the story. So we stayed after the show and hoped to meet Norm. And then, the people at the venue were like, he left, get out of here. And I'm like, now let's hold on. And finally, like after them telling us, like, get the fuck out of here. Like, I was like, no, we're holding on. Five more minutes. He comes out and I go, hey, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I wrote that story. He goes, there's no byline on it. So I didn't know. I would have said something or asked you about it from stage. And I was like, yeah, I'm just a huge fan. Love your stuff. And he goes, you ever been to Saturday Night Live? And I was like, no. He goes, well, you should come. And his manager was there. And she's like, yeah, here, take my number. Call me if you're going to be in New York. And this is when I was a college student. So I had like $11 to my name perpetually, and which now I'm up to $17. but so we called, and me and my friend were like so stoked about this possibility. We called like 2 weeks in advance, and she said, all right, cool. I'll set tickets aside. And if you guys want to come hang out day of the show and like come backstage and meet people, let me know. I was like, what the f-? So we ended up doing that. And Norm walked us around Saturday Night Live and introduced us to people. And like, here's the best part is basically everybody that he introduced us to, he was like, this guy named me Man of the Year. And then every person had the most amazing response you would ever imagine. Like, it literally was the funniest shit I ever heard. And there was this one writer who's kind of legendary, but I can't remember his name. But we met him, and Norm told me, he goes, this guy's going to name me Man of the Year. And this guy looked up at us, took a deep breath, sat back. He goes, it's about time. Yeah. So it was pretty amazing.
Wow. That describes your life in a nutshell, right?
It kind of does. It is a weird, I mean, okay, here's another one. I'm sorry. Now I'm just on a roll. But we went to the WGA Awards, Mike and I, for Long Shot. So we're in LA, just like tons of awesome people around. I know Kumail Nanjiani because he's judged Literary Deathmatch before. So like he's walking by, like Kumail Nanjiani. Kumail.
Silicon Valley, the big sick. That's who you were talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And like Patrick Stewart of all the different Patrick Stewart fame, Catherine Keener. Catherine Keener from Get Out and all these other movies. Anyway, like all these people are swirling around at this award show and it's just amazing. And right before the show starts, Mike and I were in the side room and Jordan Peele walks by us on his phone. And it like was cool because everybody was now not in this room. And Mike was like, shouldn't we say hi? It's like, he's on his phone. He goes, we're doing it. So we go in and we say hi to Jordan. And we're like, hey, just want to congratulate you on Get Out. And I told him about how that's been a big influence on my new novel. And he's like, how so? And we ended up having like a 5-minute chat about my book and like about racism and all this. It was awesome. And then we sat down and lost to some game. I was just like, man, bummer. I feel like we could have won. But also, I don't know. Here, I'll tell you one more story about this because I'm on a roll and apparently I'm not jet lagged anymore. But the day of the awards, we got there at 2:30, but 11 a.m., I'm like, if I found out that Terry Crews was one of the people who's going to be doing award stuff, whatever it's called, presenting. And I was like, if Terry Crews is the one to announce us, we're going to win. And he's like, that sounds cool. So the show starts and we expect, because we're video games, to be one of the first five categories, just like, you know, let's knock out the lame ones or whatever. But the show goes on nearly forever without us getting announced. And it's like, it's gotta be like, we're getting close to like best screenplay, you know, and stuff. And then Terry Crews comes out and I am like, holy effing S, like, this is gonna, I can't believe it. Like, he's gonna announce us. And he ended up announcing two comedy awards and then he went away. And then Puddle's Pity Party, a clown, announced the video game thing and we didn't win. But yeah, that's pretty good stuff.
It's tough, man. It's tough out there.
I mean, it's tough out there.
That's where you say, but you know, to get nominated was
an honor.
An honor, absolutely.
Well, most people said getting nominated is winning, especially, you know, because we can, now we're big shots, and yet nobody knows who we are. That's hilarious.
The great Adrian Todd Zuniga. Mr. Zuniga, thank you very much. Once again, the book is called Collision Theory. You can pre-order it today from indiebound.org. I'm very excited about this. I'm gonna pre-order it as soon as we are done. Any parting thoughts, last words that you'd like to share, and how can people find you on the internet, and where can they find you? Because you're doing some tours and all sorts of good stuff coming up.
Yeah, I'm going to be all over the country doing just talks and stuff with my book, and those are always going to be fun. They're just going to be weird. I just like doing weird, fun stuff when it's live shows. AT Zuniga on Twitter, literarydeathmatch.com, or Adrian Todd Zuniga for if you want to find out anything at all about anything. Really, the entire universe is in those websites. Mostly just thanks for having me on. I know it's weird to talk, you know, novels on video game sports podcasts, but I think it's, you know, it just shows that we're all growing up rich. I think it really shows. No, it doesn't show any of that stuff, but I'm excited.
Well, you know, it's funny. Before we end, you know, you were, you know, I mean, I knew the name, but I certainly got to know you from the Sports Game Guy, Sports Anomaly. You think about who was on that show and what they're doing. It's pretty amazing, right? I mean, you know, you have you who has, you know, created all of these entities, including Literary Deathmatch, and now obviously, you know, doing Collision Theory and Long Shot, you know, writing for Madden, right? I mean, that's a big deal. You got Ryan Intihar, the Fragile Eagle, who will never escape that nickname, who is the creative director of what will be, if not the biggest, you know, one of the near biggest games of the year this year, with Spider-Man.
Pretty amazing.
You got Greg Ford, who is a vice president at a video game, you know, consulting organization, who is, you know, let's face it, Greg, you're too good to come on the show, right?
Yeah, we get great, it. Greg.
Understood. You know, that's some and pretty unbelievable stuff. And then, of course, that spawned Four String, you know, and Mike Suzek, who went on to write for Joystick and is doing some really great stuff now. I was able to
to grab on to that. I'm now chief marketing officer for a baseball video, well, not baseball, for a multi-sport, you know, video game company. I mean, look at what you created, sir. Look what happened.
It's pretty amazing. Well, here's what I'll say to anybody out there who's like, these are my final thoughts. Like, I've noticed lately, like the people that are creating TV shows or the people that are on TV shows, like these are all people I know now. I'm like, oh, wow, that's, oh, yeah. Oh, cool. Wow, they got a show. And it's like what you realize is for everybody out there, if you just want to do something, just start doing it now and just keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it. And one of two things will happen. You'll eventually like knock over that domino and it'll start happening, or you'll start to like move and shake in a different direction and you'll end up where you never thought you wanted to be, but then you're like, oh yeah, this is pretty cool. But yeah, that's the thing that I think a lot of us, especially now, it's just like, oh, I just want it. I want it. I want it. It's like, nah, you can want it, but like, be cool about it. Cause it's like, you're going to get there. You just have to be patient. Cause it's going to happen. I mean, I don't know. I just know a ton of really amazing people that just kept doing it until finally somebody's like, all right, fine. We'll put on your TV show. We'll make your film. We'll, you know, put you on the air, whatever, but it's cool. And success is, says that, yeah, it's a pretty fascinating thing.
Thank you, sir, for everything. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for starting the Sports Game Guys Sports Anomaly. Thank you for being, you know, the guy who created a lot of the connective tissue that, you know, to this day, playing in the leagues and having the conversations. We're all a big part of this community, and you're a huge part of making that happen. So good luck with the book. I'm excited. I hope it does even more than you're hoping that it does, and I hope it leads to even bigger and better things. So thanks, man.
Thanks, man. I'll talk to you soon.